Welcome back to our journey through Exodus. We're slowing down here in chapter 20 as we continue through the Big Ten. The Israelites are gathered at the foot of Mount Sinai. Fire has descended upon the mountaintop. Thunder and lightning crack the sky. The great mountain trembles, and the voice of Almighty God speaks the Ten Commandments.
Now recall that the Ten Commandments represent the moral law, though we should clarify that the Bible text does not make a clear distinction between which laws are moral or civil or ceremonial. Those categories were added by commentators, and they can be helpful. And although we might not all agree on where to draw such lines here, it is clear that these Ten Commandments are set apart by the simple fact that they were spoken by the voice of God to all the Israelites. Because of that, many scholars believe that the Ten Commandments apply to all people throughout all time, though the Sabbath is somewhat controversial.
Also, Romans 2 reminds us that all mankind has been given a conscience, a God-given sense of right and wrong. So even those who have never read this law still have a law from God. And these ten are right at the core of morality. No murder, no adultery, no stealing. So here, God clarifies for his people, these are the essentials.
So let's jump back in at commandment number 4 in verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns.
For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy.
Sabbath day, rest. Rest is a gift from God. Rest is one of the basic needs of the human body and the human spirit. And rest will prove to be one of the Bible's core themes from Genesis to Jesus, from creation to Revelation.
Can I just say thank God for the weekend? When I say TGIF, I mean it. Work is a gift and rest is a gift. So work hard, then rest in him. Now, the original Sabbath was on our Friday night and Saturday day, the seventh day. And the rest wasn't just time off. It was a Sabbath to the Lord. Time off from work to rest in him. And keeping that day holy helps us learn just what holiness is. Sabbath is a day set apart, belonging to God. It is holy.
And that gift was for everyone. Young and old, rich and poor, servant or boss, everyone rests. But what exactly counts as rest? And should everyone take it on day 7? The Sabbath has proven to be perhaps the most controversial of the 10.
Right. Jesus stirred up controversy when he healed people on the Sabbath, and even told some to carry a mat. Jewish leaders didn't like that, because he violated their definition of rest. But Jesus explained, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath.
Controversy today centers around which day of the week to take your rest. Jews start Friday evening. Most Christians take Sunday off, but some disagree. However, Romans exhorts us to stop arguing and stop judging others regarding Sabbath day. One person considers one day more sacred. Another considers every day alike. Each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. If that confuses or concerns you, please read Romans 14, Colossians 2, and Galatians 4.
But there is a greater issue at hand here. Hebrews 4 explains that the Sabbath rest is about more than just a break every weekend. Hebrews says that there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. That is, our ultimate Sabbath is found in the truth that we do not work for salvation. Jesus completed the work on the cross, and our hearts can rest in him. That is our Sabbath. No earning, just trusting. And that is better than 1,000 Saturdays. Here at the halfway point, we move from commandments about loving God to commands about loving others. First up, mom and dad. The family unit is the basic building block of social structure, and family relationships are foundational to both personal and community well-being. Family is core to life, so honor your father and mother.
But family relationships are not always easy, whether your family is whole or in pieces, or just plain complicated. The people closest to us are often the ones who hurt us the most. But there are no conditions given to this command. Honor for parents does not depend on your parents' worthiness. It's about your character.
Think about it. Parents are the very first relationship for every human. Whatever their character, this is God's first opportunity to work on your character from the time you're born. So God says, start with honor. I realize that it gets complicated if parents are abusive or negligent or just not there. Showing honor does not mean allowing abuse. If you are in danger at home, tell someone. But the heart of the matter here is every child learning to show honor.
The word honor includes respect, care, and gratitude, essentials for every relationship, but learn first at home. Honor affects our words, our actions, and our attitude. And as children grow, their honor for parents will ultimately teach them respect for God.
Paul reminds Christians that this verse still applies in Ephesians 6, when he also tells children to obey parents. And he focuses on the promise here. When you honor parents, you'll find that you live long in the land. It pays off. Society runs better, and life goes better when parents are honored.
Verse 13 in Commandment 6, you shall not murder.
That one is just two words in Hebrew, no murder.
The Hebrew language holds a distinction between kill and murder, just as the English does. Murder is the taking of life without legal or moral justification. Thus, capital punishment and self-defense are not considered murder. Further laws will address those separately.
Murder involves factors of premeditation and intentionality. And back in Genesis 9, God established the wrongness of murder on the foundation that every human is made in the image of God.
Jesus extends the application of this commandment to a hard issue in Matthew 5. Not only is murder wrong, but hatred is as well. While murder is to be settled in the courts of man, God's court will also address anger and insults, because murder begins in the heart.
Then verse 14 and commandment 7, you shall not commit adultery.
No adultery. The Hebrew word literally means breaking wedlock, and it means exactly what the English word means. A married person having sex with somebody other than their spouse. Now, sex outside of marriage is called fornication. God sets rules against that elsewhere. This one is about protecting marriage.
Now, for anyone who feels like God is getting all up in your business, keep in mind that God created your business. God created sex and marriage and family. He made them good. And he is here protecting his good creation. Adultery is destructive to the core, and God is protecting you and your spouse and your family.
Just as he did for murder, Jesus also tells us that adultery is a matter of the heart. To lust is to commit adultery in the heart, and the heart matters.
I should clarify here that simply having a sex drive is not a sin. When Jesus said, anyone who looks at a woman lustfully, the word for lust there is more than just sexual arousal. It indicates desire with intent. It is elsewhere translated covet, as in setting your heart upon something forbidden, something that isn't yours. This isn't a sex drive issue. It's a heart issue. It's not the feelings, but what you do with those feelings. Feelings are natural, but what you do begins in your heart.
But that heart issue is a tough one. Paul wrestles with it in Romans 7. Paul explains that the law was helpful. It helped him recognize sin. But sin seized the opportunity, and he started sinning all the more.
In other words, he was coveting and lusting already. Then God's law told him that those things were wrong. But just knowing how wrong they were didn't help. When someone says, "It's bad, stop thinking about it," sometimes that just makes you think about it all the more. Just telling you that something is wrong does not give you the power to stop doing it. So Paul says God's law made him realize just how full of envy, greed, lust, and hatred he really was. But that heart issue is a tough one.
Paul explains that he wanted to do good, and God's law showed him how he should do it. He loved the law, but something else was at work inside him. Sin kept pulling him to do wrong, and his flesh gave in. He says, "I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, I do."
Paul says that his mind was a slave to God's law, but his flesh was a slave to sin. And so ensued the war inside. Finally, Paul laments, "What a wretched man I am. Who will rescue me from this body that is subject to death?"
And for that answer, we'll come back tomorrow as we continue through the Ten Commandments and find the hope that no law can bring.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.